You made in Gangrejan, I wanted to ask you about a little bit more. Anne brought up the topic of vipalasas, and as we know, there are three vipalasas of sanya, citta, and ditti. And usually, for the three times four, it is these kinds of vipalasas with regard to taking what is impermanent for permanent, not self for self, what is foul is taken for beautiful, and what is dukkha is taken for sukha. But one thing you said in Gangrejan, which I hadn't heard before, was you said the 12 were the three vipalasas applied to the four noble truths. So three times four noble truths is 12. Would you say a little more on this?
Vipalasa, titi vipalasa of the four. Dukkha.
Four noble truths, right, okay. And sanya vipalasa of the four noble truths, citta vipalasa of the four noble truths. And can we say in effect that the meaning is the same if we say it's the vipalasas of the four noble truths or the vipalasas of taking what is impermanent for permanent and so on, that actually it's the same? Because if we take the first noble truth, the five khandhas, so if any khandha is taken for something, then that is...
Like any moment of akusala, it must be vipalasa, citta vipalasa, and sanya vipalasa, when there is no titi vipalasa.
Because I've never... We read about vipalasas in suttas or commentaries, it's always with regard to taking what is impermanent for permanent or so on. I never read about it in the context of the Four Noble Truths, but the meaning must be there.
Like Satyayana of the Four Noble Truths. So when it's not Satyayana, it can be Ditti.
Veda can of the highest level can still be citta and sanya vipalasa, so the meaning is the same.
So when it's no ditti but only sanya and citta, is that in relation to the Four Noble Truths again?
I think so, because even if, like taking khandha, even if it's not taken for self or something, when it is akusala, there's still citta and sanya, there's still perversion, still no understanding of the noble truths. That moment. This before, no.
Otherwise, it is titi vipalasa of what?
It has to be titi vipalasa of taking a khandha, taking it, the khandha for something.
The dukkha.
The dukkha.
Yeah.
Taking it for
permanent.
Permanent, taking it for sukha, taking it for beautiful, taking it for utter. Mm-hmm. But then, for example, with the first noble truth, okay, one can understand, but what about third noble truth? Because that's not taken for
someone
anything.
Someone thought that he had attained enlightenment, experienced nibbana. That is wrong, titi. Yeah, and sanya and citta.
And the fourth one, easy to understand. Because when they take the wrong path for the right path, then all the perversions are there. Or I suppose with regard to the second noble truth, when lobha is not seen as the cause of dukkha, when lobha is taken for what is beneficial, then there must be all perversions there.
At the moment of liking it.
Yeah. Well, if it's just liking without any wrong view, then it's just citta and sanya
vipalasa.
Okay, liking it because of wrong view.
The idea of self.
the wrong view of self has been eradicated, they're still liking it.
Visanya vipalasa and chitta vipalasa. That should be eradicated.
Ajahn, just a small point. After Sotapa is coming through the speaker, try that.
Ajahn, after Sotapanna, can we say, obviously there won't be any ditti vipalasa. What about sanya and chitta vipalasa after Sotapanna?
At moment of, like something?
Yeah.
Dislike something?
Dislike something? Like something?
Because...
It's still vipalasa.
Right, yeah.
Vipalasa with every akusala citta, so even the anagami has citta and sanya vipalasa. So only ditti vipalasa is eradicated.
And also the sotapanna
has, so all kinds of ditti vipalasa have been eradicated, but also the citta and sanya vipalasa with regard to taking impermanent for permanent and not self for self, so all kinds of vipalasa have been eradicated of those. So it's just citta and sanya vipalasa left with regard to taking what is foul for beautiful and what is dukkha for sukha.
We just mentioned the wrong path earlier, and coming back in the van from Gangrajan, we were talking about the wrong path, and I think the wrong path is just wrong view. Is that right? Because the other factors of the wrong path are jetasikas that arise with either gusala or agusala, jitta.
The wrong view is ditti jetasika.
Right.
Not quite clear how this differs, how vipalasa differs from wrong view.
Titti vipalasa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But without titti, citta can be akusala. Okay. Because sanya vipalasa and citta vipalasa is the.
Okay. Okay, all right, okay. So what other kinds of vipalasa are there? Okay.
33 kinds of vipalasa. Ditti, which is the wrong view, citta, and sanya. So it's ditti vipalasa just when wrong view arises, but citta and sanya vipalasa at every moment of akusala.
One topic that came up in Vietnam was how the visible object that now appears is conditioned by the other rupas in the kalapa in which it arises.
Pudrupa.
Right. For example, now there's visible object that's taken for glass and there's visible object that's taken for microphone. Is the difference accounted for by the other rupas that arise together with the visible object, or are there other things that account for the difference?
Without the four primary rupas, they cannot be the visible object.
Correct.
That's why visible object appears as different shape and form, mm-hmm, because of Mahaputarupa, more or less.
Right. So can we say the visible object that arises
with the Mahaputarupa?
With the Mahaputarupa.
Whereas the Mahaputarupa cannot be seen.
Right. So we can't actually, as it were, separate the visible object rupa from the other rupas.
Indivisible rupa.
Indivisible, yeah. Right. Some people have the idea that the visible object is different by thinking only.
With our Mahaputta rupa, can right. there be different shape and form be seen?
Well,
we see this.
I suppose you could say the same thing about each of the Mahaputta rupas, though. How do they differ then, like the hardness and the...
The hardness must be conditioned by kamma or citta utu ahara. They are different by conditions.
Different by conditions. So likewise, is the visible object different by those conditions too?
Different color?
Yeah.
Different shape?
I mean, is it different by utu as well as by virtue of the indivisible rupas with which it arises? Yeah.
The kama does not produce just the mahabhuta rupa. Wherever mahabhuta rupas are, there must be that which can be seen.
John's waiting for me to ask a question, but I just find
it. Trying to feed into
I find it just too difficult. I have a wrong understanding of concepts and realities, and it comes out in our discussions that I've missed the point somewhere. So that is a concept.
What?
Well, anything.
What is that? That is concept.
That pen.
What do you take for a pen?
Well, I take.
There must be see.
Yes.
Only touching, can it be pen?
No. And seeing and touching, the visible object and hardness can't be pen.
Only visible object which is seen, no idea about hard or soft. Because hard and soft cannot be seen.
Right, okay. But I think you're saying because it's maha...
Putarupa.
The visible object can only be seen one way. I mean, everyone sees a pen.
If you don't call it a pen, it's seen.
Sorry. but, you see, I've got the wrong impression that concepts are completely removed from realities. So the idea of the quality of a pen doesn't exist. It's purely a story.
So you're trying to get the difference between a reality and a concept, right?
Yes.
Does a reality have shape and form?
Well, no, I'd say no.
Yeah, it doesn't, okay? Right. So that's one of, if you want to make that kind of, it's what we, for instance, we see this case, pencil case, whatever it is, and it automatically has a shape and form in terms of a visible object, okay? But it's not a visible object when we think of it in terms of shape and form. Then it's a concept.
Yes.
When you say this, when seeing sees visible object, it automatically has a shape and form.
Well, because that's the way most people will see it. That's what I mean. It automatically is we perceive it as a concept, and we don't realize that we're perceiving it actually as a reality. But we see it as a concept, and we say, we automatically see the shape and form of this pencil case, rather than seeing than knowing the reality of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But the realities, what makes up the reality of this thing that concept calls a pencil case? I mean, it's got texture, it's hard, it's soft, it's got temperature, it's got all kinds of stuff. But it's got color, it's got for visible object.
Mm.
If you touch it, it's got it's soft, it's not hot, it's doesn't move.
But it's not, if we're talking about physical object, it's not this that's seen at
right.
all.
Right,
it's
that's
just
right.
that which is just
yeah.
that which is visible. As soon as we start pointing to this or that, it's no longer
that's
what
right.
is
what absolutely
is visible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's ignorance and attachment which are preventing us
from knowing the reality that is seen as visible object. Visible object, and I'm open to correction from anyone here, visible object, there are many processes in what we conventionally call seeing, but only seeing can see. Seeing can only see visible object, but it arises and falls away so quickly, the jitas in succession, that there are a number of vipaka jitas, each in its process, in succession, and the arising and falling away as quickly as it does presents to the mind without when Panya is not arising to know visible object as shape and form. It's the light stick. It presents as shape and form, and then my understanding that is, I mean, this is pretty simplified, but there is subsequent recognition by sanya of that shape and form, which will remember the concept from the past that this is a case. And all of it's, you know, and only Panya can see it, but if seeing did not see visible object, there would be no pencil case here. And it,
yes, I think I need help, because I forget where I'm going wrong. It bubbles up every now and then in conversations, because I think the concept and the reality are so remote that it makes no sense. I think Sarah once said, if visible objects weren't different, how would we cross the road? Because we wouldn't know the difference between a car and a tree or whatever. But there is no roads and no trees, so it doesn't have an issue.
I think what Ken's issue is that because what is seen is just that which is seen, it's not a table, it's not a chair, it's not a shape and a form, so it has nothing to do with the concept, but actually, and each visible is conditioned by the other Mahabhuta rupas that arise with it. So each visible object seen is actually different from each other one. The visible object seen now arises and falls away, and another visible object is seen. And if visible objects weren't different, then there wouldn't be any idea of shape and form or anything else. So it comes back to the visible objects, but still what is seen is just visible object. Is this your point?
Yes, I think that's exactly my point, and I still don't get it.
John, would you like to... Is there anything you can add for him on this point?
Without reality, can there be anything like people and things?
No.
No. So the absolute reality is a reality. Citta is citta.
Yes.
Cetasika is cetasika. Each one is different. Mm-hmm. But when they come in lump or in compact, we think that it's something. But just talk about one reality at a time in order to really understand that what we take for people and things are only many, many different realities appear, arise together. For example, just talk about one reality, a reality that can be seen and is now seen, right? Whenever there is seeing, there must be object of seeing.
Yes.
Seeing cannot arise without object of seeing. So if you don't call it concept, if you don't call it visible object, it's a reality, an element, right? It cannot be anything at all, only that which can impinge on the eye, sense,
yes,
and can condition seeing to arise.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, seeing cannot arise at all.
Okay.
So, now at this moment, there is always the idea of something, because no understanding of visible object or that which is seen as it is, as a reality, arises with the four primary rupas. Without four primary rupas, there will never be that reality which is seen at all.
Yes.
We begin to understand the absolute realities one by one. Mm-hmm. So there can be more confidence on realities as no self, no one at all. Visible object cannot be microphone, it cannot be anything. It's only an element which is object of seeing only.
Yes, yes. Arjun, if I was to ask you how you categorize all the different visible objects, I would have thought that you could categorize them in terms of desirable, moderately desirable, and undesirable. But this other way that I'm starting to learn, it's got to be something more than that, hasn't it? It has to be pen-like or not pen-like or moderately pen-like. Am I making myself... I don't know.
Can I just, to add something into the discussion, say that the characteristic of each visible object is the same. The characteristic, that which is known by awareness and understanding. But what we call the shape and form is different. As Ajahn is saying, each visible object, rupa, is conditioned by other factors, the temperature, etc., and the other rupas that arise together in the same kalapa with it. There's only one characteristic of visible object in terms of what awareness is aware of. So whether it's a pleasant or unpleasant visible object makes no difference. Awareness just knows visible object as that which is experienced by seeing consciousness.
So that's the characteristic.
The characteristic. And whether the visible object is a mass of people or in darkness or a landscape, again, no difference in terms of its characteristic.
Okay.
But there's thinking about the shape and form.
Yes.
Which means that different objects appear.
Yes, but so the thinking must be able to tell the difference between a visible object that is related to pen and a visible object that's more...
Taken for glass of water.
Yeah. So there must be some characteristic in that visible object that tells thinking pen rather than water.
Well, it's not a characteristic, though. It's an attribute.
Something.
And it's not just visible object. It's like Ajahn says, it's the four Mahabhuta rupas. Right. So what is taken for pen is not just because there's visible object that is experienced, because visible object arises and falls away, is conditioned by the four Mahabhuta rupas. So we're not saying that one visible object is what represents a pen, or the pen, what we take for a pen is just because difference in visible object, but it's also difference in all the rupas. Because each rupa is different in that respect.
Isn't that just spreading the blame? It's the same thing, same problem applies to all the others then, that applies to the visible object by itself.
Right. When John was saying that all visible object by characteristic is same, that's one thing. But it's different when it says that no two visible objects are same. Right, the visible object that conditions what we take for a rose is different from the visible object that's table.
Right. Seeing sees exactly what it sees. It doesn't see something different from what is seen now.
I have a question for Ajahn. When we talk about thinking of the nimitta and anupayanchana, the shape and form, is that shape and form of the reality, visible object, or is that shape and form, does it have some other meaning?
The four primary rupas are different when they arise like this. Mahabhutarupa here and Mahabhutarupa here. See? Are they the same amount or combination or quality or what? Without those, there can never be the different, what we call whisper object, which makes different things.
And it cannot be the idea of microphone or book or rose or any other object.
I have doubts about shape and form, because I thought you cannot see shape and form, only think about it.
Yes.
But if they are not different, can you have such different thinking? That this is this and that is that?
So that is seeing.
Yes, but seeing what?
All the visible object.
The four primary rupas and the other rupas cannot be seen at all.
No.
But they are different in quality, combination, composition.
Yeah.
That's why it makes the visible object different. Otherwise, it must be just the same. One color, aura.
Yeah. But I was not thinking of shape and form. I saw different colors.
Different color, can there be the idea of shape and form? So we have to come from reality to the nimitta and to the idea, which is concept.
There cannot be any impression, even beginning of impression of shape and form, if the visible objects were all identical. So that it's just visible object that's seen. But each visible object is different, otherwise there could never be idea of or impression of shape and form at all, let alone a story about microphone or table.
And why the microphone is always the microphone and not suddenly a pen?
Because all inanimate objects are conditioned only by utu, we are told. All inanimate objects are conditioned only by utu, right? According to the text. So they all have the same conditioning factor, but they'd have to be different. Otherwise, there wouldn't be mountains and there wouldn't be sea.
Is it experience through eye sense?
Sorry?
Is it experience through eye sense? Through eye sense?
Well, the visible object is...
No, the shape and form.
Yes, the visible object is experienced through eye sense, and then there's thinking about the shape and form of the visible object.
I understand that. So the shape and form itself.
Without different colors, can there be shape and form?
No.
So I'm suggesting an Ajahn comment, because I think earlier Betty said that realities don't have shape and form, but from what we've been discussing, it seems that we can talk about the shape and form of the visible object, and that it's the object of thinking.
Of different colors, conditioned by the four primary rupas.
Is that the visible object having shape and form, or the nimitta? The very quick arising and falling away of the visible object.
The difference, quality, combination, composition of the four primary rupas.
But
so each visible object must be different because it arises with the four primary rupas, different ones.
Nimitta of the fire stick.
Yes,
it's a different meaning of the nimitta and anupyanchana that we're talking about.
Yeah, the nimitta anupyanchana is the nimitta of the reality. I guess I'm
what
confused.
What reality?
Visible. Well, in the
different one that's ways, different objects.
Okay, let's do visible object. The
different objects.
Different object. Each visible object.
Sound, different sound. See. Color, different color. Smell, different smell.
So. Well,
but smell is smell,
mm-hmm.
but it is different at any different time.
But the nimitta anupyanchana then is the nimitta of the object.
For example, at moment of seeing, it must be the different color is seen. One at the moment.
One color per moment.
One visible object.
One visible object.
Altogether, it comes up as shape and form.
As different colors. Of different colors which provide the impression of shape and form. Okay.
Well, I have to try to listen rather than to promote my own theories. That's what I wanted to do today. But
I think we'd like to all hear your theories.
Well, when we say there's a difference between concept and reality, in reality there's just dhammas. There's no people. In reality, there's not a room with people sitting around a table. There's just dhammas.
In reality, there's not the experiencing of a person or a room as object of experience. It is conceptualized about.
Yes, but isn't it also not true that there is that there are people here in a room? Is there any truth to that?
No, there's just the rupas. I mean, what you take for people and things is just rupas.
But are there a conglomeration of rupas here, another conglomeration sitting there, and they're looking at each other and passing the microphone around?
Can we know? Can it be known?
Well...
Or just speculated about?
It can only be speculated about.
Well, I thought when you said that the difference between concepts and realities meant that, yes, it's... There's no such thing as concepts. There's only reality. So why should we... We wouldn't even speculate about it possibly being true that there's people.
If a Dhamma isn't being experienced, can you know whether or not it's arising at that moment?
No. I suppose not, but I'm not quite sure if I ever know. I mean, I understand dhammas do arise, and they're arising now, but I don't know which ones. Is that what you mean?
You're asking whether Sarah exists as a person over there, when all you can be sure about is there's a visible object that's taken for Sarah at this moment. So the rest is an assumption, just like the
But I think you're also saying that that particular visible object could only be taken for Sarah, couldn't be taken for anything else, because of some attribute, I think you said, or word. There's a Sarah attribute in some rupas.
Well, the visible object that's taken for Sarah doesn't have a Sarah attribute, but it does have shape and form that differs from the visible object taken for Anne.
And it's not visible object.
It's so many other things. Sound, thinking.
Is there only visible object, or there are also Mahabhuta Rupas? What do you take for Sarah?
I see what you mean. Yes, there are both visible object and Mahabhuta Rupas.
Now, what do you touch now? Please.
I'm touching. All right.
What do you touch?
Hardness.
Really? What do you hold?
The same thing. Sorry.
What are you holding?
Conventionally speaking, sorry. A microphone, a table.
Okay, in order to understand concept, conventionally speaking.
Yes.
What do you touch or hold? Now you are holding.
Now I'm holding the microphone.
See, microphone?
Yes.
How come the idea of microphone when it's only hardness?
Well, because thinking has been conditioned to think there's a microphone without, and there are people in this room
without seeing, close your eyes and someone give you something and you get it. What did you get?
Conventionally speaking, again, sorry, it, without...
If someone handed you something in the dark, your eyes were yes. closed and you just touched it,
or hold it.
You couldn't be sure, 100%
no,
sure.
No, all right, was. Yes.
You might guess it's a microphone, but...
Yes, so sure. I thought, I was thinking, and I thought everyone else agreed with me until recently, that that was just thinking, that the difference between holding a microphone and touching a table is just thinking. But apparently it isn't.
So realities are directly experienced, but the idea of that, when you think about that, and what conditions such thinking? The child cannot think about the name and the thing. No. When it's just newly born, it sees only that. No idea at all. No. But after seeing more and more and more and more, and memory about different shape and form, or touch, or smell, then they get the idea of this and that.
So that's, it's, and it's the root is that it, that, that make the difference, not the child's way of thinking, or, yes.
Just only seeing one color, there cannot be any idea of book, or anything at all, table. But when a child sees and sees and sees and remembers different shape and form, that child know, recognize it with our word, right?
Yes.
So the nimitta is in the thinking, is a thought of the child as something there. No word at all yet, because of the nimitta of that which is seen, or nimitta of the sound which is heard. That's the way to learn to have concept or idea. But concept is there before knowing what is called at all. So without realities, there will never be concept. But the arising and falling away of reality so very quickly condition different shape and form and idea of that thing. And that is concept.
Okay, good. That's all I have to
so
accept.
Can,
yes.
Can we conclude that without difference in reality, there wouldn't be different concepts? If
one,
all reality,
yeah.
if all visible object was
only
the same,
black,
then...
Only white, no idea.
Right.
But it's back to your question. Both, so the visible object, the color, each visible object is different. But also the accumulations of the child to think or remember in this way or that way is different. So it depends on the accumulated sanya, what will be marked, what will be remembered, what will be thought about. So both come in.
Yeah, but the marking and is there from the very beginning, regardless of the accumulations, and marking different rupas.
But that sanya, the marking, is also the experiencing, for example, the seeing as a result of karma, the accumulated thinking and accumulated sanya immediately after the experience of seeing, that is accumulated right from the very beginning.
This takes me back to another way I went wrong. Ajahn, this... I remember trying to tell someone once on our internet group that sanya marked the present object and it remembered the present object. My understanding of it was that sanya didn't remember previously marked objects. It only remembered the present object. So it,
no succession
no
from
succession.
First moment to the other moment?
That's the idea I had, yes. No, it didn't matter about succession. The succession was just a concept.
What do you mean by remember in this context? Because if it marks it, you mean it stores it? When you say it remembers it, you stores it in memory or what? Because there's nothing to recall. You don't mean recall.
No.
You mean mark and what?
Well, I just see if that's the way the seeing cheetah for example, operates. The object is there, and all the chetasikas work on it. Sanya's function is to mark it and to remember it as a marked. And just as in conventional speaking we say, oh yes, I remember that from the past, in absolute reality there's no past, there's only the present. So Sanya just marks and remembers the present object.
That question some time ago, if Sanya marks, how can it remember? And I remember Ajahn saying, do you remember me? And yes, I do. So it marks and remembers.
In absolute reality, the world is the present moment, isn't it? So when Ajahn said that to you, she was... Yes.
But this was present. This citta has been conditioned by previous cittas. This sanya arising, yes, and marking, remembering now, marking and remembering visible object that's seen now, has been conditioned by previous cittas. It's not just arising in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. So what has been marked and remembered before, it's not forgotten. It's the sanya is accumulating at each moment of thinking about this person or that person. Whenever kusala or akusala sanya arises, it is accumulating.
When sanya experiences visible object, it doesn't mark it as Sarah or glass of water, does it? It just marks it as visible object?
That visible object marks that object that's seen, right, because yes, it's vipaka citta, so it's result.
Vipaka citta. Oh, but for the whole, also in the Javana citta, it just marks visible object. It doesn't mark Sarah.
But it does things though. It marks the thinking of different concepts, of different they're different processes. But in the processes of the process of thinking that will follow. Sometime, several processes after seeing, it marks thinking about Sarah.
Yes. Well, I thought perhaps it didn't. I thought perhaps even in the following mind consciousness processes, it was just, it's only thinking that says, oh yes, I remember a glass of water. Sanya doesn't remember a glass of water.
But the Sanya experience is exactly the same object of thinking. So the concept is the object. Sanya is marking and remembering that concept as well. Yes. It has exactly the same object as the citta it arises with. And even in the sense door process, when there's attachment to what is seen, Sanya is conditioned by that attachment and vice versa. So it's okay, marking, but also conditioned by the other factors arising with it.
Mm. And this brings me with a discussion I had with John once, because I was trying to argue that Chaitanya, for example, only performed the only function Chaitanya performs is to will kusala or akusala. It doesn't pick up pens. That's not a function of Chaitanya.
No, Chaitanya can't. Anyone can pick up?
No one can pick up, because it's just a concept.
So there must be Chaitanya, right?
There must be, sorry?
Chaitanya, you are talking about.
Oh, sorry. There is
Chaitanya to pick
but,
the pen.
Oh, I don't know. Wouldn't that be just thinking? Isn't it just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, but it's thinking. Chaitanya thinks, oh, I'm picking up a pen, but, I mean, sorry. Cheetah thinks I'm picking up a pen, but Chaitanya doesn't. It just thinks I'm willing kusala or akusala.
Yeah, but there's
right.
Also...
I mean, Chaitanya does not think. Chaitanya just wills.
Yeah. So it's thinking that has the idea of picking up the pen. But
yes,
that thinking conditions, or can condition, the bodily movement to follow.
like there's chanda involved, interesting. And they're all momentary mental factors that only have the present reality as their object. But because there is that, and then a lot of thinking about all these realities that are being experienced, the idea of this, an idea of picking up the pen.
Yes, I think.
So we don't have to identify which mental factor is motivating the bodily movement.
Well, I don't understand bodily movement. That sounds like another concept to me. But that's just the bodily movement of picking up a pen is pure concept. There's
but
no.
How could you pick up the pen?
We can't. There's no pens and there's no people. There's just dhammas.
But conventionally, they're picked up all the time and written
yes,
with.
Yes,
yes, conventionally.
Conventionally, but that's just thinking.
We have to speak
thinking.
Conventionally.
But that's just yeah, thinking. Yeah. There's no convention.
You said, what conditions picking up the pen?
So did I?
We have to speak. Well, I think you introduced the topic of picking up the pen. I mean, we have to speak conventionally.
Mm.
But actually, I mean, that's correct. It's just citta, cetasika, and rupa, but actually chetana arises with every citta. It's not just willing, kusala, and akusala. I think that's a bit misleading because chetana arises with every citta,
yes.
coordinating the other cetasikas and the citta, like the head boy or head girl coordinates the other prefix. So even at moments of kusala or akusala, it has the function of coordinating the other citta seekers and the citta.
Yes. I don't see why that helps, though.
Well, because you said the only function of chetana was to...
I knew there were two functions, but the only one I wanted to talk about in this case was the willing. There's the other function they talk about, the rounding up and stirring up the other chetasikas.
So just to identify your problem, which is a question, that would that be, how does it come that someone can pick up a pen? Or what is the, let's not put it in terms of jetana, but what are you having trouble explaining?
Well, if someone asks me what is the function of this particular jetasika, I would say it's to will kusla or akusla, also to round up other jetasikas. But I wouldn't say it's to pick up a pen, and I wouldn't say it's to steal or to kill or to lie, because those are just concepts. They're just thinking of what we're doing.
We can agree with that in terms of moment-to-moment function, yes. But is there a problem beyond that of how does it come that someone picks up a pen or...
No.
No?
Well, it's just that there's two opinions in there. And
so let me just try to summarise it. Kunsuchin, usually when we talk about chetana and we talk about the two functions, so there's the function that arises with every moment of citta, of coordinating the other citta seekers and the citta. And the second function, when it's referring to nana kanika, chetana, this is actually referring to when chetana has brought when karma has brought a result. So only when it's brought a result is it nana kanika karma or chetana. So at the moment of kusala and akusala citta, what is the second function if no result is brought, if it's just a moment of kusala or akusala?
If you don't talk about function, that is still chetana, right? And if there is no citta chetasika, can the body move?
Can the body move with them?
Without, if there is no citta and chetasika, body alone, can it move?
Well, I'm sorry, because I don't really understand the question, because there is no body.
We are talking about citta, cetasika, and rupa.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And usually we call this body, but actually rupa, many rupas. Yeah.
Or just thinking taken for body.
Without rupa, can you think? And then there's body just by thinking?
Just think to have rupa?
Think to have rupa? Can you have rupa from thinking?
Can we have rupa without thinking? Yes.
Can you please think about rupa? And if you think that rupa arises from thinking, you think you have rupa, or there is the rupa?
Sorry, no, I thought
there is rupa,
the concept of the body.
And you, do you think that you have rupa, or no rupa, but you think that you have rupa?
So I'm getting confused, but when we're talking conventional rupa and when we're talking Dhamma rupa.
Yeah. The rupa is what you take from body, right? From head to toe.
I suppose so.
Body.
What you take for body is rupas. What you take for me right now is rupas, certain rupas. Visible object.
All right. Apart from that, I know it sounds silly, but there's no John, really. So I don't... In ultimate reality, there's nothing that's taken for John. Because... I'm talking in circles now.
Nothing that is John, or nothing that's taken for John?
Well, I wouldn't have thought that there was something John attribute in a rupa, as opposed to my way of thinking about.
Don't you have, Ken, the memory, the accumulated sanya of Jonathan? Because that is marked over time. So enabled you to enables the recognition to take place.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I just have that accumulated way of thinking.
Which enables you to recognise Jonathan.
Well, yes, but am I recognising anything real when I think I see Jonathan, or is it just my thinking?
It's your thinking. It's thinking.
Right. Now, if John wasn't here today, are you saying that there's a particular rupa that didn't turn up today?
Then you're not thinking in a certain way. You just wouldn't think that because he wouldn't be here. Or you could think of him when he's not here.
All right. Well, I tend to think that concepts are all false, no matter whether I have the concept of John being here or not here. In reality, there's no John.
But if John wasn't here, would there be any difference? I mean, what if you imagined that John was here, and now John is here, and you're thinking about John? Is there any difference? And what's the difference?
Could I just ask Ajahn to comment on something Ken just said? He said all concepts are false.
No reality at all. Oh, what?
Only the visible object and the seeing consciousness. Releasing, sorry.
So what's Jonathan?
It's a creation of thinking.
If there is no solidity, no citta, no cetasika, can there be Jonathan?
Well, no, but it still doesn't make it right, does it? I mean, I could think...
May I change his name? But I cannot change reality.
All right. So there is only one concept that's right.
What is concept?
One story that's right.
The object of thinking.
Concept, yes. All right. One object.
Conventionally right story, Samuti Satcha. So this is a glass. Actually, it's just the object of thinking, but conventionally it's the right object. So it's
Yes, but this is where we started. Satcha. This is where we started the conversation. That, you're saying that in absolute reality there is something out there that's more glass-like than...
No, it's just an object of thinking and that's all. So it's not that there's nothing right.
But it can only be thought about rightly in one way. It can only be thought about as water. It can't be correctly thought about as pencil.
Conventionally.
But there's no concepts in either right or wrong because they don't have any characteristic. But there is thinking in different ways, with ignorance, with attachment, with wrong view, with metta, etc.
So let's just come back to the chetana. So chetana arises with every citta and coordinates the other chetasikas and the citta, leads them to the object, like the head prefect, and at moments of kusala or akusala citta, the chetana also coordinates the kusala citta seekers, kusala citta and akusala in the same way. So, for example, at a moment of giving, there is the kusala citta with that chetana which conditions through kaya vinyati, the bodily movement and what we call the act of giving. So if we drop the term function, if we stop talking about function, then actually at that moment, chetana plays exactly the same role. And when it conditions that act of giving with its associated chetasikas and citta, then it may bring a result later. Is that all? That's all we can say?
Instead of using any word, I think that if we understand the characteristic, it must be much better. For example, if you use the word coordinate, it means that that reality coordinates jetasikas and citta to experience or whatever, to act or to perform deeds. And once the deed has been done, it can be a condition to produce result later. Because it's the result of the deed. Whatever one does, there must be what is done.
And what has been done, this is ahosi that we mentioned the other day. It doesn't mean ineffectual or something or not bringing result. Some people think it just means the deed that has been done. And as we know, it will depend on conditions, whether there are results. So actually, no need to think of two functions because that... It's misleading, I think. Better just think about the quality or nature of chetana and how it conditions the citta seekers and citta it arises with and how, depending on the circumstances and whether it's with kusala or akusala citta, there can be a result conditioned to arise later. And whenever the deed has been done, it's always ahosi.
When we say don't think about function, don't separate what this function or that function. Yeah.
Don't separate. It.
Don't try it.
Because it's really just one, the function of coordinating and just those, but when it coordinates with the kusala or akusala, there may be a result later, that's all.
Like mark and remember.
But, yeah.
See?
Think of it as separate functions so that it does one thing, which is mark, and it does something else and remember, but actually at the same instant it is marking and remembering, so it's not like they're separate or two different functions at all. So whilst it's marking, it's also remembering
what it marks,
what's marked at that moment.
Remembering must mean by reference to things that have been marked before, because this present moment now that is being marked, next moment is the past. And although the past doesn't exist, it did at one time exist, and so anything that's marked in the past can be remembered. Anything that's marked at one moment can be remembered the next moment.
But I think that's probably Ken's question. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, is that while it's performing the function of marking the object, the present object, that's what it's doing. And what does it mean to remember something from the past at that moment? Because at any point, there's only just that one chitta with that object and marking, right?
Yes.
May I say, don't mind too much about marking or remembering.
Yeah.
Because how can one know at that moment what functions are predominant or obvious?
A lot of what we're discussing today comes down to things that we can't actually know by direct experience. It is conceptualizing about the world out there, whereas the focus of the teachings is all about understanding the reality of the present moment. And if we try to understand the whole scheme of things as described in the text, then it may be a distraction from understanding the reality of the present moment. Making the distinction between the information that is necessary and useful to understanding the reality of the present moment and other information that doesn't directly relate to that, but just relates to the concept we have according to our reading of the teachings of the world at large and the universe.
Yeah, but I would argue that right at the beginning when we learn that all dharmas are anatta, is that how to pronounce it, or is it anatta? That means that there is nothing out there. Oh, that's what I thought anyway. I thought it meant there's just that dharma and there's no past or future, just the present moment. That's the entire universe. And we can't say, oh yes, there is that entire universe, but there's also this other reality where there's people sitting around a table or clumps of rupas sitting around a table. I would have thought that that's what anatta meant. There's no clumps of rupas. That's just thinking.
What's your understanding of the term anatta? How do you translate that?
Devoid of anything other that is not the Dharma itself. The present object that's being experienced, like all other objects, is completely alone. There's no accompanying.
Is there thinking?
Yes.
Is there thinking?
There's thinking in all.
Is the question just, is there thinking?
Thinking, yes, is a dharma.
So it's a reality. Thinking is real.
Definitely, yes.
It's no one who thinking thinks, right?
Yes.
Is there seeing?
Yes.
So no one sees, right?
Right.
So all adhammas, realities, doesn't belong to anyone.
Yes.
At all.
Right.
So, what is Jonathan?
Jonathan is nothing. in this?
No, no, yeah, no one here. Yeah. So Jonathan is nothing.
No. I don't think.
So what you take for Jonathan is what? There must be something like that. Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and thinking.
Like Ken?
Yeah.
Yes, like me. If it's only Chitta and Jetaseeker, why do we need to talk about there also being Ken and Jonathan?
So what you take for Jonathan must be that which can be seen, that which can be touched, and seeing, hearing, too, smelling, tasting, touching, all are realities.
Yes.
Seeing is seeing, not I. Hearing is hearing, not I. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that there is nothing. There are realities, different realities.
Yes.
Yes, I think he would agree with that, but I think his point is that what we call Jonathan, the name Jonathan, the concept, is not a reality because it's just an idea. So what is seen is what is visible, and there's thinking about what is visible, and then there's the thinking of the idea of Jonathan, but the idea of Jonathan is just an idea, not a reality. Is that correct?
Yes.
So far? Yeah. Mm. And so I think no question about that, but I think the question is that, and as we know, and as Ken would agree, there is just one world appearing at a time. There is just living alone with the cheetah now, and that's all that can be known about what is real, that which is appearing. But that doesn't mean that, of course, there aren't many other realities and rising and falling away all the time which are completely unknown. Those are also dharmas, but they're not experienced, they're not known. And those that arose and fell away in the past were real when they arose and fell away, but now completely gone.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, no, you don't have any problem with that. So,
right? Yes, well, yes.
So you mean don't give any name to anything?
Well, yes, well, why do we need to? I mean, mm-hmm. Shouldn't we just learn about the present realities?
So we need to use words?
Yes.
Okay.
You're saying we need to or we don't need to?
Well,
do we need to think? We do, right? It's not a question of we do or we need or not. It's we do.
Yes, but we're speaking conventionally all the time, and that's where I get confused. When are we speaking conventionally and when are we speaking in reality?
Right. Thinking is reality.
Yes. But then you say we need...
And it thinks about different things, the objects of the senses, or what's past objects, and it speculates about the future.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it wouldn't do that if it wasn't real, the thinking, yes. And it wouldn't do that if there were no different realities and difference in realities.
Yes, all right.
I think you're saying so, because there are only realities and there's no Jonathan, why do we have to talk about seeing Jonathan? Because Jonathan is a figment of the imagination.
Mm.
But it's just like the sutta language which the Buddha taught. It's just a convenient, it's just shorthand for talking about realities. Actually,
yes.
There is no Jonathan, just right. A visible object that's seen, hardness, touched, and an idea that is thought about. But we talk about seeing Jonathan now because
yes.
We know what is being referred to.
Yes,
but of course it depends on whether there's any understanding of realities or not as to knowing what is being referred to. It's just like reading the suttas. If there's an understanding of realities, we know whatever we read. It's just about realities. There was no Ananda, there was no Sariputta who was being addressed. But whilst addressing them, no misunderstanding that actually
yes.
Only cheetahs, cheetah-seekers and rupas. But for convenience, we say Ananda or Sariputta or Jonathan.
Well, thinking is absolutely critical for understanding to take place. if you don't think rightly. Thinking is not understanding, but it's through thinking that understanding can be developed.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking enables understanding. We have to think correctly for understanding. So thinking is indispensable. I know it might... Thinking is indispensable for understanding to develop.
Well, what about when Sarah mentioned Ananda just now?
Mm-hmm.
There is no Ananda. That's
ultimately.
I agree with that. I love that.
But there are,
I think that's great understanding. But then people say, but there is a stream called Ananda. And it might be a stream of, or a big clump of rupas that existed 2,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And I don't see why we need to think that way. Well,
I don't agree with the concept of stream, but we do agree that citta rises and falls away in succession, right? That's one function of citta, to rise and condition the next one. And so when I identify as Ken, what I take for Ken, and if I recognize it and I talk to you with the expectation that you'll respond to me, it's not because it's not necessary that I have to think that that's a stream of citta, but there is a reality of citta rising and falling away in what we take for Ken. That's citta rising and falling away as now, citta rising and falling away, one following the other.
There's only one.
At a time.
One.
Yes. So there's no...
Each one is conditioned by the one, the falling away of the one before it.
Yes.
And so that relationship, the jittas that arise in succession, if I can put it that way, can be considered a stream, because the falling away of one conditions the arising of the next.
Yes.
Between the parisanti jitta and jutti jitta, and the bhavanga jittas that arise in between,
mm-hmm.
are all conditioned by the same gamma.
Yes. Oh, all
right. Ken's heard a lot about and has a lot of confidence and appreciation about how there is just this moment, and all the teachings, all the pariyatti relates to understanding of this moment. So I think his question is why do we need to talk about streams, or why do we need to talk about birth cheetahs or last life cheetahs? Is that right? Or
I hope I'm correct in saying Ajahn talks about cheetah being alone in the world
with right understanding.
Yes. So,
what do you mean alone, by alone?
Well, I thought that alone meant that there is just this one citta and citta-seeker. Thinking might say, oh yes, but there's lots of...
But what knows that? That there must be only one citta and citta-seekers arising together, nothing else.
Nothing else, yes.
So who knows that? What knows that?
Panya.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So... Panya knows that there is only this present.
Panya understands a characteristic at a time only.
Oh,
one
see.
At a time.
Yes, right.
Nothing more.
Yeah. So it doesn't know that there's no
alone
out there.
Yeah. Arising and falling away.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
And don't forget the rupa, because you keep talking about only citta citta-seeker, but also rupa. There's citta citta-seeker and rupa. Is that a problem?
No.
But I think his question, Ajahn, is if there is just understanding the alone citta or citta-seeker rupa, what is appearing now, why speak or why refer to streams of consciousness or billions of cheetahs or other past cheetahs? Is that right?
Continuity.
or continuity?
It's continuity of knowing that that glass was there in the past and it's not a pen.
One moment at a time, one citta at a time. Mm-hmm. One citta or a citta is conditioned to arise. Whatever arises falls away. The falling away of the previous citta conditions the next citta instantly. This is what you take for three. No gap at all.
That's right.
And nothing. One citta and another one. So there's one. Only that one citta. There's only that one reality.
Mm-hmm.
But that not followed by nothing. There's
well,
another
it's
citta.
Not followed by any, there's no following. There's only the present moment.
You mean? Yes, you mean visible object, and then thinking. They're not too different?
Well, they can only...
Seeing and thinking, they're not two different chittas?
In the same moment? Or in two different moments?
They're two different chittas, right?
Oh,
so
I
one
see,
moment
sorry.
Of
yes.
understanding seeing.
Mm. No.
Understanding seeing, which falls away. Another
yes.
moment, another chitta.
Yep. So all we need to know is the present one.
Yes, we can only ever understand one object at a time.
Yes.
But that's not all there is, because one of the functions of chitta is to condition the next one, another one. And also...
It's still all there is, though, isn't there? I mean, there might
at that
be...
Moment.
So at the moment, yes.
It's not the only thing we have to know. There needs to be understanding that chitta, chitta-sika, and rupa arise by conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And that they arise by... conditions and continue to arise by conditions. It's I think what I'm picking up is a freezing of the moment.
Mm. Snapshot.
Yes. and while one can there can only be understanding of one moment at a time, there are one moment conditions another, and there are successions of moments. If there weren't successions of jitas, there would be no light.
There would still be a present
jita. Not
that's
if
life.
It didn't have one preceding it.
But, sorry, you take...
Well, I think you're trying to say, if there's only one jita at a time, how come it seems that there's a past and a present and a future and a people and things. So the development of the path taught by the Buddha is not seeing the world as just a single jitta at a moment. It is the development of understanding what is appearing now. So if we take as a starting point, look, there's only one jitta at a time, so that's all that can ever be experienced, that wouldn't be a correct starting point.
His point is that the development of understanding is about understanding what appears now. So seeing now, visible object now, thinking now, one reality, that's all. It's nothing about past cheetahs. It's not nothing about next life cheetahs or zillions or anything else. But the point is, the only point of discussing and considering more about details such as cheetahs arising by nantra apachya and conditioning each other, or the detail about how chaitanya can bring a result, is only in order to understand more about the characteristic which appears now as anatta. Because if there was just hearing that, okay, visible object appears now, there can be understanding of visible object. Is that enough for understanding to develop? To really understand that reality is anatta, or is it necessary to hear a little more detail, such as how visible object conditions seeing at this moment, how seeing is a result of past karma, for example? Because if nothing else is heard, the inclination is for the seeing to be taken as my seeing and the visible object to be taken for something. So I think it's right. It's just
living alone with just what appears at this moment. But in order for that to really be understood, there needs to be a little more considering, and that's why the Buddha taught about khandhas and dhatus and ayatanas and different aspects to indicate that in the past and the future, far and near, it's the same.
Yes. I think this brings me back when I started all this bothering people. When you say that, I'm agreeing with it at all. As far as I can understand it, I agree with it entirely, but I seem to be understanding it differently. So when it comes down to the nitty-gritty and people say, ask a certain question, then my answer is different from others. Even though we all seem to say we agree with what you said then, somehow my understanding is different.
What's your understanding of the development of awareness at the present moment?
Development at the present moment is a jeta seeker called panya, perhaps? Or thinking, that if there's real development, it has to be panya, doesn't it? They can be thinking about development. But and it's just a dharma.
What would be the object? What would be the object of jitta with panya, sati panya, the present?
Visible object.
A single moment, or?
A single moment, yes.
I don't think there can be awareness of a single moment at the beginning level, because earlier we talked about the analogy of the fire stick circle.
So you're saying Panya can know more than... At the beginning, Panya knows
can only
concepts
know,
of...
Can only experience the nimitta. That is the circle. It cannot pinpoint where the burning tip is that forms the circle. So no one ever said that awareness begins with awareness of a single moment. Awareness begins with a single object, but not a single moment of a single object.
But even then, according to Ken, it would be just that. I mean, just regardless whether it's knowing many moments or just one moment, it's just one object, right? And no idea about that object being here, there, of anything, just that. Why talk in terms of difference, in terms of difference in visible object, difference in sound, when that's just that, just one moment. Yeah.
So when you learn more details about the conditions and the elements and the ayatanas, it really helps to see more clearly anattanas, how it is all conditioned. So it has really, it makes sense to learn more details.
Yes. But not too many. But too many details can confuse.
It depends.
John, we got onto the subject now of awareness, of presently arising reality.
Can right awareness of the Eightfold Path arise without right understanding at all?
Without right understanding of, sorry?
Can right awareness of the Eightfold Path arise without right understanding as well?
At all.
Oh, right awareness, sorry. No. Build always
no.
Together.
So, if there is no panya which knows the characteristic of right awareness, it's impossible for right awareness to arise.
Yes, I see, yes.
That's why there must be parayati, patipatti, and pativeda, or satyayana, kichayana, and katayana.
Remind us that in the beginning, not really beginning, but somewhere in the beginning, one
needs to know the difference between moments when there's awareness and when there's not. I mean, that understanding itself implies that the understanding that there's no just one citta, differentiating between moments when there's awareness and when there's not, right?
I mean, that's part of the knowledge that what
Pandya knows as it develops. So I don't think that even when there's satipatthana of one object, one goes away with the conclusion that there's only one reality at that moment.
How many cittas are there altogether?
I think there's 52.
Citta.
Oh,
citta. How many
citta? Oh, sorry. 89, I'm told, yes.
How many citta are there?
At the
altogether, how many cittas are there?
89 altogether, yes. But only one now.
But the point is how many cittas, like seeing is a citta,
mm-hmm.
conditioned by its proper conditions. Hearing cannot be seeing, it's another citta. Different by conditions.
Yes.
Because the eye sense cannot condition hearing, and the ear sense cannot condition seeing at all.
Mm-hmm.
So at moment of seeing arises, it has to have its own conditions for its arising.
Yes.
Just to see and then fall away, it cannot do anything at all. It cannot be kusala, it cannot be akusala, it cannot think, it cannot make a plan. Just arise to see only one function, that the other cittas cannot have that function at all. So it's one citta of the 82,
mm-hmm.
89 cittas.
Mm-hmm.
So cittas are different by conditions.
Yes.
And seeing at this moment is not the seeing previous moment ago.
No.
At all.
No.
Even seeing just arise for once and then fall away, never come back at all.
Mm-hmm.
But there are all together 80 types of cittas.
Yes.
So when you talk about one citta, it means at a time.
Yes.
And it falls away, never come back, but it conditions the next citta instantly by anantara paccaya.
Mm-hmm.
And samanantara paccaya.
Yes, thank you. Yes, that's...
So, at the time, one citta means only at a time.
At a time.
Not only. There is, I mean, it doesn't
not
mean...
the same one.
In fact, it means there's going to be another one.
Another one.
And one and one.
Yes, different ones too.
On the discussion list was, I gave a quote about from Ajahn when she talked about attachment and how it's not just attachment, it has to be attachment to what is seen, visible object, or what is heard, sound. There has to be attachment to a reality, and we would say without attachment to the reality, to the taste or the sound, then there wouldn't be thinking about an idea of the taste or attachment to the idea of the taste. But I think you mentioned about, for example, chocolate, how there couldn't be attachment to chocolate because it's just an idea. Actually, it's just attachment to the visible object, attachment to the taste, and thinking about chocolate, right?
Yes.
So I think his question was whether when you talked about how the attachment is to what appears now, the reality, what is seen now, visible object, sound, but what about attachment to chocolate because it's just an idea. Would you like to add a little more?
Well, the understanding I took from that was that the function of lower barriers to attach to a sense or to another Paramita Dharma. It's not to attach to concepts.
Really? Really? Really?
Well, I thought it might seem as though I'm attached to chocolate, but that's just thinking. There's really
thinking with attachment.
Thinking with attachment, all right.
The object of the thinking is the concept of chocolate.
Is it?
In Thailand, when the baby was born, parents thought so much about the name. To be given to that child. Maybe 1 month, 1 year. Yeah. Yeah, because it means that even the word and the name is object of attachment to you.
And would you suggest that when there's thinking about chocolate, the concept, no attachment?
Well,
what taste?
Well, that's what I thought when Sarah quoted you on
the
list.
So you just think about chocolate, but not the taste sometimes, because you know what chocolate means, but the taste is quite different from just what you think. There are many tastes of chocolate.
Yes.
Dark or white or what?
Yes. And if there wasn't a taste object, rupa, there wouldn't be loba.
There wouldn't be memory of the taste.
Yes.
Like if I say
chocolate ice cream to a child, there'll be loba. If I say coconut ice cream, no loba, because there's memory of particular tastes when there's hearing the sound and then thinking with memory of the different tastes. Mm. So which conditions loba,
right,
or not loba.
What about attachment to a person? Because a person doesn't exist, but one can be attached to a husband or wife or family.
Yes, well, and that's what I was thinking.
And what name you like? Nina, Sarah, Anne?
So that's real attachment.
Just the name, no one, only name. Which one you like?
Oh.
Which name? What name? Never the same. A-N-N-E?
Yes.
A-N-N? Which one you like?
I don't know.
What about Howard and Ken?
Yeah.
Are they the same?
No, they're all right. I prefer Ken to Howard. But is that just thinking about attachment, or is it real attachment?
Attachment is attached to anything except Nibbana and Lokuttara Dhamma. Only then.
I think the point was, if there's no attachment
to realities, there'll be no thinking about concepts, no thinking with attachment of concepts. So it depends on the realities. Like the example, attachment to one's family member or one's husband or wife, actually it's attachment to sound and taste and memory of, not sound and visible object, memory of the sound and visible object and tangible object. So even though it's dependent on those realities, but actually it's a concept about them that is remembered. So there's the idea of name and person.
Would you say that the loba can be stronger later when there's only the concept rather than, in the beginning it was quite mild? The loba is quite mild to the reality and then strong for the concept.
For example, children.
I mean, how do you experience your children? Seeing, touching, right? But the idea of being attached to my son is very strong, or my daughter. I think more than the color, the hardness, softness.
The story about my own
absence makes the heart grow fonder.
All right. Yes, I would have thought perhaps your attachment to your family is just thinking about attachment rather than real attachment.
I don't think we think about attachment.
No,
we're just attached.
We can, but if there's, let's come back to the present moment. It can be known whether it's real attachment or thinking about attachment, can't it? It could be known if there was the banya that knows the different kind, that knows the kusala moment from the agusala, or different kinds of kusala and agusala. So when there's anger, for example, towards an object, is it not real anger just because the it's a concept, a pure concept? Suppose we remember something that happened earlier in the day and we have anger about it.
Well, I can see that you must be right. But the thinking I'm locked into is keep saying that the answer is that's not real. The real anger is conditioned when a rupa is experienced in a sense dual process.
Okay, so what are the roots at that time? What is conditioning the citta which thinks, and what appears like anger now to someone? What is the cetasikas there?
What are the cetasikas?
Ignorance and dosa.
So dosa is there.
Yes.
So we can
get angry to concepts.
Oh, sorry. Yes, I see what you mean. Yes. Yes, the idea of concepts becoming objects of consciousness does seem a little bit superfluous to me.
Like someone on the discussion list
mentioned about anger with the noisy neighbours upstairs. Well, at the moment in the sense door process, just sound that is heard, and there may be dosa with the arising in the sense door process, but afterwards when there's thinking about those noisy neighbours upstairs and how they're disturbing one, when is the anger stronger? Whilst thinking about those annoying neighbours, not in the sense door process when the sound is heard. And so if the anger is strong enough that one goes upstairs and yells at them, well, this is conditioned by cheetahs in the mind door process, not in the sense door process.
Yes, I'm out of my depth here.
But aren't you kind of adhering to a theoretical construct?
Yes.
Instead of understanding
anger
when it arises, or
sort of... We all have a theoretical construct, but mind construct.
Well, we do, but in terms of developing understanding of the present moment reality, it may be completely wrong, so we just pay attention to what we've heard about the present reality and awareness of it.
Yes.
And then a lot of these matters would become clearer. Whereas if we say, as I understand the world explained by the Buddha, A, B, C, therefore, if I have awareness, it's going to be like this.
Seems
to be putting approaching
from the wrong direction.
How about the, just because we've got very little short time left, when you were last here a few years ago, you had a discussion with Khunsu Chin about visible object, and you mentioned something about odour, and afterwards you kind of asked us several times, well, what was meant, and would you like to just clarify that, summarize it for Ajahn and ask her what she meant?
Yes, but does that tie in with what we're talking about now, or is it a different thing? What I was talking about then was, how can we say what is the present reality. When there's trillions of present realities every second, and only some of them we think about. So isn't there smelling, tasting, touching, everything going on all the time? And some of them we think about, oh yes, I can smell that, or I can taste that, I can touch that. But that's why I asked, is there smelling now? And you answered, can you smell anything?
Does it appear? Well, saying, does it appear?
But I don't know the answer to that. It, well, I'm saying it does.
But seeing, does seeing appear now? Visible,
well,
object?
In over a period of time, there's a lot of seeing going on.
Well, now, though, is there seeing?
No, I think in terms of Dhamma, being reminded about Dhamma, regardless of whether the other experiences are arising or not, but we do think in terms of what's seen a lot. So when someone asks, Achan asks, is there seeing now? Because we think primarily in terms of what's seen. Now that's the what you need. That's a reminder to understand seeing, invisible object. Regarding whether other things arise or not at that same time in that trillions of mind moments, that's just unnecessary.
So I was diverging from the. When I asked that question, I was diverging from what Ajahn was talking about. I was changing a topic, sort of thing.
Well, Ajahn might like to say that only something that appears can be object of awareness, present moment. Right?
You mean the path, right awareness of the Eightfold Path?
Yes.
Because that which has gone cannot be conditioned for right understanding to directly understand because it's gone. And the future hasn't come yet. So only that which appears can be object of awareness and right understanding.
Yes.
But it's not just a seeing. The succession of that which sees arising and falling away as nimitta of seeing begin to be object of right awareness.
Yes.
Until there's more and more understanding of that reality which sees. So there can be more confidence of no I at all. It's only just that which arises to see.
Mm-hmm.
One characteristic at a time.
Yes. But I don't disagree with that. Do I? I mean, have I said anything that to disagree with that?
The point about the Oda one was there was a talk about we were discussing perhaps seeing visible object appearing now. And Ken's comment at the time was, well, maybe odour, or because yeah. There are many other experiences of other realities, so it could be odour. And your question to him was, well, does odour appear now? Is that something like?
What is the smelling now?
Is the smelling now?
Yes.
Yes.
And so
the implication being that it didn't appear now, or what was it that confused
that's right.
you?
Well, my understanding was that the dharmas are appearing all the time, and whether we know it or not, we think, are they seeing, are they smelling? But that's immaterial. The dharmas are
arising
by
appearing.
Conditions.
Arising but not appearing. Was that what you're saying?
Well, being experienced. Yes, every dharma, every there's seeing consciousness followed by hearing, tasting, smelling, thinking. All those things are happening, aren't they? All trillions of time every second.
And you're right or we're right. I mean, it doesn't matter because that's just speculating, right?
Speculating.
Oh well, I thought that was Abhidharma. I think that's when we first. We introduced Abhidharma on DSG. We talked about trillions of chittas per second.
It's the nature of the mind to move from one object to the other, but that doesn't mean that the sense doors all arise in a cycle all the time. Why should it?
Because
these are conditioned by karma, aren't they? It's vipaka. Experiencing through a sense door is vipaka, so it depends on what karma is ripening at the present moment that determines what's being experienced.
Or maybe, according to you, the difference, say, for example, two people walking together in a park, one notices colors, one notices sound more, and that's a matter of accumulations. And you would say that, in fact, this guy experiences all the sounds and all the colors same, right? Mm-hmm. But like I said, that's just speculating. Mm-hmm.
Well, doesn't common sense say that we are doing that all the time? Because otherwise, we wouldn't hear things. So we'd be focusing on seeing. Then someone would yell out, "Hey, Ken!" And if hearing object wasn't always picking out things, sometimes ignoring them because they're not relevant, and sometimes thinking about them and thinking, "Oh, there's my name being called out," just because I think, "Oh, someone's called my name," doesn't mean there's been more hearing or less hearing than there normally would be.